Strategy and Insider, exploring future trends and their impacts.
Welcome back to the Strategy and Insider podcast. I'm Thomas, your host and a partner in the Pharma Life Sciences practice at Strategy and. First and foremost, a huge thank you to all our dedicated listeners for your continued support. If you do enjoy our episodes, we would greatly appreciate your positive reviews and subscriptions on your preferred podcast platform. In today's episode, I'm thrilled to continue our exploration of the future of healthcare by diving into another fascinating area that we have not yet covered. It's the private equity in the healthcare sector. We'll be gaining insights from the perspective of a leading investor, and I'm genuinely excited about this conversation. Hence, a very warm welcome to Dr. Cornelius Maas, partner at the SHS Capital, which is one of the premier private investment firms specializing in medical technology and life sciences in the GSA region. Founded in 1993 and based in Tübingen, where we are currently meeting at greatest weather, I have to admit, here in southern Germany, SHS Capital focuses on both private equity as well as growth financing. The company's activities range from financing expansions, changing shareholder structures, succession planning, management buyouts, as well as buy-in scenarios. And beyond capital, SHS Capital offers healthcare companies access to its extensive network and expertise in market access, but also reimbursement, marketing and sales, M&A, but also around exit strategies. In his role as a partner, Cornelius oversees deal flow and represents SHS Capital on a number of portfolio companies from the various sectors. Cornelius has been with the firm already for a decade, starting his tenure while balancing his career as a professional handball player and studying international management at the Leipzig Graduate School of Management, where he also earned his PhD in innovation management. Pursuing his scientific interests, he is also a lecturer at the ESB Business School at Reutlingen University. I'm sure I could go on, but stopping here. So Cornelius, it's really a pleasure to have you with us today. And also thanks for inviting us to come to Tübingen.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to the discussion.
So do I, to be honest. And as mentioned in my introduction, you do have a very impressive career as a professional handball player, competing for the German national team and even winning a world championship title with the junior national team in 2011. However, an injury at the age of, when was it, 24 it was, right? Abruptly ended your sporting career. Yeah. And what I found surprising, obviously, is that in a previous interview, you mentioned that this turn of events might have been actually the best thing that could have happened to you. Hence, I'm obviously inclined to ask what you mean by this, and don't you sometimes miss it after all?
I would say today, I think like that. Back then, of course, it was first of all a surprise, a very bad surprise, and pushing me for a reorganization of myself and my career dreams and career plans. But now, as of today, I think it's pretty how things should be. And I'm really not happy is the wrong word, but I think at the end, the professional sports scene is like a honey trap, what I'm calling it sometimes. That means you are, of course, having attention, spotlight, and also a very interesting journey over the years. But after being 30 or becoming then 35, you, first of all, feel that you are in a physical, really strong and heavy daily life, which, of course, having then also the consequence of the body is signaling you this. But especially, I think that many professional sportsmen oversee that life is hopefully much longer than only 35. And to be honest, much of the sports disciplines are over after 35 years. And then a lot of professional sportsmen see that actually the qualification they miss to generate over their professional sports career hit. And then being 35, having a damaged body, having no qualification on the academic side, that's not the best mix of then starting your next career, actually. Thank God in Germany, a lot of, let's say, also programs and initiatives which are supporting professional sportsmen in that, let's say, very important life phase. But long story short, I think life goes on. And if you then start from zero or with actually also like a hypothèque where you need to start 10 years after some, let's say, other peers, that's actually a challenge. And so, long story short, it was not my decision. but at the end, I'm very grateful that I am here today. I landed softly, I would say, at SHS in the private equity industry. And I would say now, today, I have a lot of, let's say, learnings from the sports scene, which I can now transfer to the real world.
So in the end, everything in life does happen for a reason. And I really want to pick on what you just said last in terms of what are the learnings. I mean, switching from professional sporting into private equity isn't obviously a very smooth or natural choice. And surely there is elements from the sporting career that you can transfer also into what you're doing, into the management that you're now responsible for. What is this? What is it that you kind of bank on still today from what you've learned and experienced in the past?
There are several things I would say. Let's start with resilience. I mean, let's face it, the private equity transactions, that's like a roller coaster sometimes. So it's work over a month, which could be for nothing, actually. Never say nothing, but at the end, it's about making deals, making successful deals. And of course, working on a project, doing due diligence, and at the end, not achieve the signature. That's pretty tough sometimes, let's face it. And then it's about this, okay, you need some time sometimes, but then next morning, so to say, let's get up, let's search a new project which you want to focus on. That's a mentality you need to have in our job. And that's one thing I would say where I can highly benefit from my sports career, where it's also about the lost game and even sometimes disaster game and the next day training. Okay, let's look in the future and not back. And I think that's an interesting thing you learn on a very heavy way sometimes in sports, but I can clearly benefit today. Then I would say that it's a big word, but the fascination maybe. So I think, as always in life, you need to have a fascination for something where you need to spend hours, even days, in one topic. So it's about the deep dives, and this could be physically, like in sports where you train twice a day, where you're pushing weights and la la la. And this is of course a physical burden. And if you speak about the private equity industry, you are transacting millions of euros. So it's about really diving deep into the topic to the end, to understand the supply chains, to understand the logistics of trucks, for example, to just do the due diligence on all work streams. You need to really come to the end to data of the data room, for example. And this is a, let's say, also focused topic where you need to be fascinated at the end, because if the fascination is not there, I would say you stop at 80%, and that's not enough in our job. And that's, I would say, another dimension where I would say I can benefit from the sports. And last, maybe it's about saying no sometimes. So we are, of course, in an environment where really smart people come together, running companies with several hundred employees. And of course, sometimes it's about discussing plans and exchanging ideas, but sometimes it's also about maybe a conflict of opinions. And then it's also important, I would say, to having something which I learned in sports. It's about, okay, we have a different opinion and let's now discuss what is really best for the company. And sometimes it's also to, of course, convince others with your ideas, which need to have a certain kind of strengths in the opinion. And I think that's also something which you learn at sports, acting with 20 different nations in one team, with of course also a hierarchy which is given there, where it's about playing in front of 10,000 people and it's the last kind of minute and you need to make the goal, right? Yeah. And then you also can't discuss forever. You just need to have a plan.
Either you do it or you don't do it, right? So yes. You score or you don't. Yeah. Yeah. No, I see a lot of those similarities and obviously can assimilate with many of those. And you mentioned also saying no sometimes. Sometimes you're also saying yes. And some of our listeners obviously are also coming from the startup and entrepreneur founder sphere. And they might be also interested, and I'm also interested, if you were to start your own company and if you were to pitch in front of investors, what would your personal perfect pitch look like?
I mean, of course, we are still active in the growth field, mm-hmm. so to say. So companies with a given commercialization, so we say 3 million euro top line or more, mm-hmm. is something where we can start discussing if it could make sense to let also SHS invest. Mm-hmm. So we have this pitching situation, of course, all day long. And I would say the strongest pitches, for me at least, I mean, that's also a personal thing, I would say, but I love the founders which are just joining the virtual meeting room or even the physical meeting room and don't open any slide, which are just sitting there and saying, what do you want to know? Full stop. Because that's invitation for the investor to really... Mm-hmm. work efficiently on the most burning questions. Mm-hmm. Because I would say each professional investor has read the slide deck and does not want to know about the market and so on, because he knows the market in general almost most often. And it's about, hey, I have give you some time and let's now discuss only on the most burning question. Because if it's like always in life, if some no's are given, yeah, mm-hmm. then all the rest is not that relevant anymore. And so this is maybe one recommendation I could give, that founders just ask, what do you want to know? Mm-hmm. Second thing is that I always say authenticity is a superpower. Mm-hmm. So I like founders which are maybe also different, which are acting on their way and not on the typical way. And I mean, on the content side of things, I would say for the growth phase, especially again, because I would say established companies, I mean, they are different. They have the top line since years. They should show me how to grow. But if we look on the growth side of things, on the younger companies, so to say, I would say, show me evidence that there is a third party customer. So a completely independent one from your network and so on and so forth. So independent customer who is willing to pay for your product and tell me why and why this is just now the reference customer for expansion, for example. Yeah. So this is for me on the content side of things, the most important thing. If we speak about the pitch, then I really want to deeply understand what's the motivation of the customer, what's his benefit, and what's also his kind of willingness to pay, of course.
So it starts with an end customer in mind, having an open, transparent dialogue rather than talking about something the investors already know, like the market conditions and the alike, and also being yourself. Yeah, don't play yourself to what you're not be and don't want to be, but be yourself in this. I think very helpful. And if you have also from the listeners an opinion on that, happy to learn from you in your comments how you experienced that when you went to pitches in the past. Yeah? But coming probably to also the healthcare sector, founding a company in the healthcare sector is different from other industries for so many reasons, as we know. First and foremost, obviously, it's a highly complex, regulated, and also ethically sensitive environment in which we are. In your experience, what are the biggest differences when founding and also investing, in your case, into companies in life sciences, medtech, or digital health, compared to other sectors, talking about, I don't know, entertainment or retail, and you name it? What makes it so specific?
I mean, you are right. Selling a shirt is different than selling a hard catheter, for example. And I hope that the Zalando guys will not kill me now, but of course it's about selling a shirt. It's about knowing your customer, know the price, kind of levels you can address. And of course, a big logistic and supply challenge, I would say. That's not right, but I just want to make the point. Selling a hard catheter is much different. I mean, we speak here about a combination and a multi-dimensional level of different people which are involved in a decision. So we speak, of course, about the patient. Mm-hmm. We speak about the efficacy and safety profile of, mm-hmm. of a product. We speak about the physician, which is the actual user of the mm-hmm. device, which, of course, is doing the following surgery 10 years in that way. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes with innovative products, you come and say, make it that way, maybe. That's difficult, actually. Then we speak about the health insurances, which need to reimburse the specific product, which is used via DRG or OPS codes. So this is, of course, then the first big differentiator to the shirt example, because in retail, it's about the customer, which is paying his money, mm-hmm. full stop. Yeah, and most of the cases in healthcare, it's about, the patient is not paying it. It's mm-hmm. about the health insurance, for example. So here you see the first big difference, I would say. But of course, it's not the end. I mean, we speak about the hospital procurement business unit, which need to, of course, also decide how much of the product and la, la, la. So I think this is a different angle of the same thing. So we are now having already four layers, right? Mm-hmm. And I would say, if we speak about this, then a lot of different dimensions need to also be successfully achieved already. So we speak about the regulatory bodies which are involved. So we speak about BfArM. We speak about other institutions which are just responsible for, you shouldn't use a heart catheter, which is not fully, of course, developed and also assessed by, of course, the institution which are responsible for this. So that means we need clinical evidence. We mm-hmm. need to have a lot of centers which are involved in an RCT, for example. We speak about suppliers, which again needs to be somehow monitored by the regulatory bodies. We need to have the logistic also being clarified. So you see, we have a bunch of dimensions which is only all coming together to just use the heart catheter in a patient at the end. Mm-hmm. And I mean, bottom line is, it's really multidimensional, mm-hmm. it's complex, and of course it takes time.
Yeah. And still, it's a super fascinating sphere where impact is truly high, right? So that's what keeps me awake and that keeps me running when working with the pharma and life sciences clients of ours. I mean, this gives so much back.
This is my driver, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, looking at my job profile, of course, it's complex and it's an academic also just task which is making fun. But at the end, it's about for the good, right? Yep. So you're investing the money of the LPs and your own money. But at the end, it's for the good. It's for the innovation in the healthcare sector where patients can benefit from. And that's my drive, at least for my job and daily life.
Plus one. And in your role as a deal maker and investor, you surely have also your fair share of companies and management teams seeking investment, but also guidance or mentorship from you and your company. What are the specific qualities that you are currently looking for in a founder or a management team, given that the personality of founders significantly also influences, obviously, a firm's growth dynamics, decision making, and resilience, as you put at the very beginning? And how do you support or mentor those entrepreneurs that you invest into? Mm.
So we at SHS have a bunch of activities which we are offering to our portfolio companies, which are, for example, workshops for digital marketing. That's mm-hmm. something where I would say we can highly learn from the more venture capital-like field, from the Berlin company, so to say, mm-hmm. because the German Mittelstand and the healthcare industry, for example, they having great products, mm-hmm. but of course the online marketing business units there can learn from, of course, the let's say Berlin field. And that's something where we try to enable them to make this transfer. Mm-hmm. That's why we, for example, just offering such portfolio workshops. But that's just one topic. So we also support them with workshops in cybersecurity and pen testing, for example, mm-hmm. like how to execute M&A for inorganic growth. So also, it's about one colleague here at SHS, which are really having a multiplier function. So he is doing and speaking all day long with all strategic strategic buyers of the pharma and the medtech field about our portfolio company. So you're doing like a business development kind of promotion activity, which is helping, of course, the portfolio companies in just getting attention. And attention, of course, that's the currency, right? So the C guys, which are really deciding, I mean, they have a lot of things to do. And that's how we also try to, of course, in our own interest somehow, but try to bring warm intros inside the portfolio companies. And non-operatively speaking, and that's something where I get a lot of echo from our portfolio companies, is this SHS family thing. What do I mean is that we have more than 25 healthcare companies. That means we have more than 25 CEOs, of course. And you wouldn't believe how much interfaces are between these companies. And it's about not speaking to me, but it's speaking to their peers in the portfolio. Very easy things like ERP, for example. Oh, we need to implement it now. Okay, what does it mean? What do I need to look for? It's about to have this family character being lived by our portfolio companies. They call me. I say, I know that this company just did it. Please be intro too. And then next day, they're having the meeting. And these are little things, but we're making big difference, because it's like someone just executed on what you need to execute next. And of course, it's about learnings, and of course, also sometimes things you should avoid, right?
So you're connecting also the peers to the peers, and then kind of facilitate also street learnings, kind of, rather than you talking about something that others have experienced, right? They have straight talks to each other.
And also, I mean, we spoke about the online marketing thing. I would say in general, it's about we as the investor, we also know what worked well and what didn't work. And it's like, I mean, let's say topic by topic, but it's like a playbook for success in specific topic, at least how it was really played out nicely in that portfolio companies. It doesn't mean that it could be transferred 100%, but at least it's somehow like a guidance and inspiration, at least, where the then also really hot or rising stars in the portfolios can maybe also give something back to the portfolio and then also to you as the individual company.
Looking into the private equity sector, according to the Private Equity International data, capital raising for healthcare-focused funds nearly doubled in 2023, despite a generally subdued fundraising environment across the sectors. And alongside long-term trends such as digitization, demographic changes, like growing population, middle class in developing countries of India and China rising. Also newer developments such as the rapid progress in AI, Gen AI, quantum compute power are creating new opportunities for you as investors as well. What excites you most, let's say, about the future of digital health, but also healthcare in general? And what are the trends that you see shaping the industry from an investor's point of view?
I mean, there are obvious trends. But I say always, if trends are obvious, that's too late for investor, right? So let's be about...
So you need to smell them, actually.
Actually, I mean, let's speak about a GLP-1. I mean, that's not a secret at all anymore. So, of course, you can invest here, but it's about, as you say, smelling the next wave. What we see, for example, we are highly interested in the radiopharmaceutical field. So we see a big wave in the US, which will come to Europe. So we analyzed the landscape in the US for the different actors which are there building up the pipeline. And you wouldn't believe how this looks like. There's a huge wave coming to Europe in the next years. And that's something where we are actively looking on, for example. Other trends we see, I mean, outsourcing of pharma is nothing new, but we see in the last years that companies, the big pharmas especially, try to enable new populations of patients. How they are doing this is partnering up with innovative companies which are working on innovative drug formulations, which is, for example, enabling modified release mechanisms of the drug itself within the body. So, for example, this, of course, then is improving patient adherence or just delivering better efficacy and safety profiles of the truck. That's the pharma world, I would say, if you ask me for trends. And these are two trends of several, but again, we need to smell and not to see the obvious, right? If we speak about the more healthcare side of things and maybe even the digital world of healthcare, I would say that two very interesting trends. I mean, also the other is not a secret anymore, and that's good. It's about the AI thing. Of course, there the most interesting thing is how will they be regulated and how they will be delivered to the patient. I'm clearly convinced that technology or AI can just do things which a doctor could never do himself. So I'm really a fan, and I'm really believing as a patient that if you run to a doctor in a normal life setup, you are facing a doctor which have X years of life experience and of course also medical experience. And of course, this is given and this is good. But I'm really highly convinced that technology, which has this doctor times 1,000, is the better doctor, actually. I mean, that's not, of course, given for all use cases now, for all indications, I'm sure, but there are really use cases, and of course, radiology is maybe now in the forefront of this movement. But I think the AI with all the data sets behind will just perform better, full stop. And that's good. But of course, there are some years and some also commercialization hurdles and challenges given, which will bring us in this world. So I see interesting trends also of the AI companies. They are now being the neutral creator of, hey, we are offering AI solutions and doing this as a consultation service to the hospital. And are then, of course, promoting own products, for example. Yeah. So it's interesting.
That unbiasing is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah. Very unbiased.
And on that, I personally, but also we as a company, we firmly believe that the future of healthcare will be much more also people-driven and not patient-driven and focused only. And it makes a huge difference whether you are viewed as a person or a patient, obviously. And if so, then none of us wants to get sick in the first place, but we want to prevent, right? So we want to stay safe and healthy. Hence, the third thing is that we believe it must be maximum personalized, because otherwise we're not preventing. We just not do it. And then to the fourth one, and this is hitting the nail what you said on the doctor, no one of us can actually know everything. And I'm a medic by training myself, and I do believe the last mileage will always be human made, unless we don't kind of see a difference between a robot and ourselves in behavior, look, and whatsoever. But until then, it needs to be human. And hence that human is not a doctor anymore who only understands diseases and healthcare, but who also understands healthy sporting, healthy living, healthy eating. And this is nothing that anybody can do. To coach the patient, the person, and you need to be rather a health coach than a doctor. So we talk also curriculum of our doctors to come. And this is obviously a fascinating field where we're heading towards, but we need to go there also to sustain health and sustain payability in future.
I agree. I would say in Germany, we are still at the sick care kind of phase. We need to come to the real healthcare field or phase. And that's where I would also say, but I mean, that's a big idea. But I see, of course, the difference between the countries in Europe. And I think, for example, if we speak about Norway, of course, they have also publicly and also privately insured people. But I mean, it's also maybe if we speak about demand for healthcare, which is, of course, balancing out with the supply side of things. In Norway, they are somehow regulating the demand side with people which are going to their normal doctor, which are publicly insured. They need to pay every time they go to the physician a self fee, so to say. So it's about 30 euro or something like this. And interestingly, it stops. So if you are a chronically ill person, if you reach a certain kind of amount of fee, then it's unlimited, so to say. That's not unfair to the, of course, chronically ill people. But interestingly, if you look on Germany, I mean, we have, of course, I mean, sometimes from some people, a behavior like, healthcare is for free. And I go to the doctor. Let's see what he says. And the problem arising from this behavior is that, I mean, I have a good friend, which is a GP which having 80 patients a day. I mean, this it's incredible. It's I don't know how he's doing this, but my point is we need to also here, we need to be aware of the fact that it's also about self-responsibility and maybe then also the impact of tech, which can help to just think about, okay, who really needs to see the doctor? Again, it's the same point, but a different angle. And I think that we also from the system, we have some interesting European data points where we at least could get inspired from.
Bottom line, that kind of self-care is an important one. And we need to recognize health is not a given good. That is just there. You need to do something for it, right? And it's not only the drugs that keep you healthy, but you need to cater for yourself and prevent it. And I think it's a very good impulse. Probably also coming back to, as you know, we're doing this podcast for a little while, and back in 2020, I did have the privilege of welcoming Nora Bloom, who is the co-founder of Self-P, to this podcast, and which is a successful German startup providing digital psychology support. And I know that you're also invested into it. At that time, Nora, I would also say confidently, predicted that telemedicine would revolutionize healthcare within the coming decade, and making virtual visits far more common than in-person visits to a doctor's place. Now, fast forward 4 years from there, we have just discussed the various obstacles also in digital healthcare in Germany, which makes her vision somewhat challenging to realize within the next 6 years. What changes from your perspective are necessary to overcome these obstacles, and how can we prevent founders, researchers, innovators per se, from relocating abroad and saying goodbye to Germany and going somewhere else?
That's a big question.
It is.
I would say, I mean, speaking about Germany, and that's something we try to address with SHS, it's about the lack of capital for growth phases. I mean, that's a problem, right? So we have a lot of seed and venture capital, but we don't have the larger tickets in Germany, in my opinion, which are needed to, of course, really bring something then really to the world, which is, of course, we spoke about the clinical evidence you need to just go for the FDA and so on and so forth. And that's something where we with SHS are one of very few which are acting in this growth field, which are having also the mandate to say, okay, this is now given and established, but now let's make it big. And that's a big chance for Germany, actually, in my eyes, because, I mean, we have a different, we have a interesting momentum and sentiment right now. I would say moderate sentiment, to be honest. But we need to think about where are we really good at in Germany. And I would say in healthcare and in clinical evidence and in just the technologies which are addressing patients for the good. And there we try to, of course, enable and leverage with capital the companies which are actually deserving it.
Completely with you. And you mentioned something along the lines of the current environment that we're in. In Europe, per se, but also in Germany in particular, from a broader perspective, what excites you about healthcare in Germany as a business location? Yeah? And what benefits do you see is having SHS headquartered here in Tübingen, here in Germany? What is it that attracts you?
I mean, we are located here in Tübingen. If you look only about the biotech side, which we are not acting in, but I mean, look at the innovative and really established biotechs coming from Tübingen. So you see that here a very obvious kind of data point of how much innovative mindsets are given in Germany. On the other side, I mean, it's about 60 minutes drive, the highway southwards, and you will find yourself in Tuttlingen. Tuttlingen is the high castle of medtech devices. And this is, again, a signal and a data point of, hey, we have all the, let's say, cognitive capital here in Germany. And there is this boomer generation which built up these really big established companies in the medtech field. And it's now about just bringing all back, so to say, and of course, leveraged by capital to make it big. And so we are really convinced that this is now the symbiosis where all it comes together, and where we also, as a German investor from Baden-Württemberg, we speak the language of the SME companies, of the German Mittelstand. And we try to, as said before, bring the playbook of maybe younger companies to established companies, and then to go for the big topics. So a company in totaling, I mean, FDA certification, that's a big thing, which is needing capital, but which is also needing maybe the partner within the cap table to go for the long step, right? And that's something where we with SHS are highly motivated to support such companies for the good, for, of course, the company, but also the patients.
What a great ending, I would even say, and also great promise that we should be leaving into Germany, into Europe, and what we have. And thanks, Cornelius, for your passion, for sharing all your experiences and also perspectives. And also, just want to leave you with a pledge to please keep it up, the great work that you are doing to strengthen healthcare in Europe. Greatly appreciate that. And thanks for hosting us here in Tübingen. It was definitely worth a trip, and sun is shining still. So big thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to today's Strategy and Insider podcast. As always, I do hope that you enjoyed it at least as much as I did. Please do not forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. We really appreciate your support and look forward to bringing you more thought-provoking episodes in the future. Until then, stay safe and goodbye.
Strategy and Strategy made real.